Over $4 million. That's how much money the crew helping contribute to our In the Money Plus package has won at the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge over the past few years. Don't miss out on this incredible value at $20. Going to have horse-by-horse write-ups of every entrant. We're going to have trip notes. We have figure equivalencies for the foreign horses, betting strategies, our picks grid, and more. Believe it or not, so much good stuff here. $20 is what it costs. It also just helps support us. Tons of great free info too, but I highly recommend you check this out, inthemoneypodcast.com/plus. Also, be on the lookout this week. We're going to have YouTube exclusive content, including some really good live streaming stuff. The Final Answer show going to be out there that way. The Randy and Jerry Best Bets show. We've got that too. So make sure you subscribe to the In the Money Media YouTube channel. Just go to the YouTube website. Look for In the Money Media. Click subscribe. That's all there is to it. It's a bird. It's a plane. It's the Saturday Breeders' Cup Monster Pod, and let's jump right in.
Boss man, we're going to talk a little bit about this filly and mare sprint to get the Saturday card kicked off. Two ways and means, or two not ways and means?
I'm gonna have to say two ways and means. Yeah, I think she's gonna be pretty tough. You know, this was a race that looked maybe a couple of months ago like it could be one of the marquee races of the weekend. And don't get me wrong, it's a very good race. Drew a decent sized field. There's a little bit of filler in there. I'm not really sure all of them are gonna be all that competitive. But you know what I think we're kind of hoping for was that we'd get Sweet Azteca. Hopefully that we'd get one of the Bafferts that's not named Pleasant, like Hope Road or somebody like that. But alas, they did not make it. And so what we have really, to me, boils down to four win candidates. I think Ways and Means is the likeliest winner of those. I went back and watched a lot of replays and tried to really make a determination on where Ways and Means will be early, whether it'll be okay. Obviously, without the benefit of the post draw, it's all conjecture at this point. But she's coming into this race the right way, and I think certainly was flattered by Emery's strong performance in last Saturday's Raven Run.
Yeah, the thing about Ways and Means, I think, for me, is that while from what she's done on the racetrack compared to what we've seen Society or Scylla or Vava do this year, she's not like leaps and bounds ahead of them. And I think she's ahead of them. But I think the part about her that gets me warm and fuzzy is the fact that she did those things in the middle of her three-year-old year. Well, you'd like to think she's going to continue to get better, continue to grow up, and continue to get faster. If she takes that step forward, she could be tough for those other ones. Of those other three, Society, Vava, and Scylla, I'm assuming those are, at least a couple of those are the ones that you mentioned that could beat her. Which ones kind of get you the most excited, and for what reasons?
You know, I think Society, it's funny. So in terms of the way they were bet at Saratoga, obviously Vava was the most fancied, then Scylla, then Society. And I feel like in a way, the way they finished is probably the order in which I like them this time around. I love the cutback. So Scylla to me was a bet last time. Now she ran well enough to be a major threat in here. It does give you a little pause that Bill Mott's barn has been cold. Bill Mott doesn't have the caliber of horses that he did last year when he had two Breeders' Cup winners and has had two Breeders' Cup winners each of the last couple of years. So I don't want to hold it against him too much, but you do have to be a little worried. I mean, the guy's 2 for 50. At Aqueduct, right? He's not what you'd expect. He's not done much better in Kentucky. So Scylla, to me, is a horse who's going to need a little bit of pace help. Society is the most dangerous because she's the fastest horse early in this field. There's nobody in here who can keep up with her. If she were to draw an outside post and be able to stalk and kind of take the race to everybody else like she did at Saratoga, I think it would help her chances immensely. My concern with Vava is that, see, I thought this going into the Ballerina, it was probably one of my only good opinions, and it was a negative opinion. I thought she was vulnerable in the Ballerina because I didn't love that race she ran at Churchill. I thought she was very workmanlike. I didn't really think she had that same kind of pop that she had in the Derby City Distaff or in the Madison. And, you know, I noticed last night that obviously it's still a budding career for Cherie DeVoe, but she's 0 for 17 with graded stakes horses on dirt coming off 60-plus day layoffs. And so I don't love Vava coming back off this break. I think based on what we saw at Churchill in May, she might be a filly who's better when she runs more frequently. And now she's going to be coming into this off a bit of a break. I do think she maybe went down to a slightly negative rail last time. But I don't think it mattered terribly much. I think she was finishing third no matter what. Maybe she would have been a little bit more of a player for second. So of the three, I like Society the best. My problem, of course, with Society, I think is everybody's problem, is that she doesn't show up all that often. When she shows up and when the good Society is there, she's very good and she's definitely capable of winning this race. But I think there have got to be some natural concerns about whether she's going to reproduce the form that we saw at Saratoga.
Yeah, and look, I think the other thing about this race I think is funny is that Chad Brown's looking for his third consecutive filly and mare sprint, which is funny because, you know, Chad early in his career was pigeonholed as this turf trainer who couldn't win big dirt races. Not to mention, is he going on for his third filly and mare sprint? He also has won 5 of the last 9 Champagnes. What more prestigious 2-year-old dirt race is there in this country than the Champagne? Chad's just kind of found his groove with these types of horses. And Goodnight Olive, although she was extremely good, I got to think that Ways and Means possesses a significant more amount of talent.
I think so. I think Goodnight Olive probably came along at the right time. She did beat a good field at Keeneland 2 years ago. Last year's field was not nearly at the same level. But yeah, in fact, I believe that. So this would be Chad's 4th filly and mare sprint overall. I believe his first grade 1 dirt win was the filly and mare sprint with Wavell Avenue in 2015. So he probably won one before that I'm just not thinking of. But yeah, it's a race he's done well in, and no surprise with his background being good, especially with female horses. So, you know, she, Ways and Means, ironically, a Klarovich homebred, right? Seth Klarman's 2 big Breeders' Cup hopefuls are both homebreds, which you generally don't see very much. And he owned the dam here as well before she was claimed from him, but got her back. And she's a practical joke, so it's kind of funny. And she's, you know, look, she's been very good. She's been consistent. That's one thing that we've not really seen all that much of. I think her bad races are all explained away by distance. And I don't think she ran poorly in the Gulfstream Park Oaks at all. I think she ran very well. Losing to Power Squeeze, no shame in it, given what we saw from her throughout the campaign. And then she got dueled into the ground by Torpedo Anna in the Kentucky Oaks. Ooh, what an atrocity, right? I mean, a lot of horses can say the same thing so far in 2024. So Ways and Means has delivered pretty much every time she's been given the opportunity. I think the mistake that people are going to make is they're going to label her a wet track horse. And I do not think that's the case at all. I think the fact is that she's a good horse who happened to win 2 races recently on wet tracks. She's been very good on dry tracks as well. Arguably her best race to date, at least from a speed figure perspective, was that one other than at Saratoga on Belmont Stakes weekend. And that was on a dry surface. She got a 104 buyer. So I don't really see why you'd make that argument. And at the end of the day, I really don't think it matters terribly much. She's the horse to beat. You know, from this perspective, we're doing this a week and a half or so out from the race itself. What could be the problems for Ways and Means? Maybe drawing the inside. Right, drawing the inside with 2 speeds immediately to her outside, that might force Flavian Pratt's hand a little bit in terms of where he positions her early. But I think if she's able to get to a pace stalking spot, I'm hopeful that we see a real step forward from her. And it should set her up for a heck of a 2025.
Boss man, appreciate you.
My man, anytime. Good luck. Good luck, everybody, and enjoy it.
Breeders' Cup Monster Pods continue with a look at the turf sprint. And we get to speak to a man who's been a key part of our In the Money media coverage on the In the Money Plus side, helping with trip notes, doing race write-ups, and always great to speak with this particular guest because of his blend of loving to study the form, but also being a horseman, growing up around them, knowing what makes them tick. Will Humphrey, great to have you on the Monster Pod.
Thanks for having me on, Pete. I'm coming to you live from Del Mar. If it wasn't so foggy outside, I'd move the camera over to the window and show you the wonderful view I've got of the track.
Fantastic. It's such a beautiful place. Envious that you're out there already. Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. I've been saying that Cogburn is probably the best American turf sprinter, well, ever. Do you think that's exaggeration, or do you think he deserves that accolade?
Well, you've been stealing my notes because I've got written in front of me. I haven't gone quite that far, but I have said best turf sprinter since Golden Pal, who obviously won this race a couple of years back. I mean, he's an incredible horse, really, isn't he? He's just, you know, he brings his show on the road. He wasn't even meant to run in at Kentucky Downs last time out, having been scratched off out of the off-turf Troy Stakes. And he just took it in his stride. You know, he just blitzed them to the front. His speed figures tower over this field and nothing can get close to him. Why is that going to change next week?
I tend to feel similarly about the typically US-based runners. But of course, we do have a big challenge from around the world. Another little giveaway here from the In the Money Plus side, inthemoneypodcast.com/plus. We've got our man Rob Dove, one of the top 10 pro punters of the UK today, helping us out with speed figure equivalents. He's got Bradsell as just as fast as Cogburn. Is this race going to shape up to be a heavyweight bout between those two? How serious of a contender is Bradsell in your view?
He is a contender. Him and Cogburn are currently dominating the overseas market. 7-4 Cogburn, 7-2 Bradsell, and 10-1 the rest. So he's obviously a live contender. He's got some huge question marks leaning over him, though. And the major one is the fact that he's never been around a bend. And Delmar is a tight, sharp 5 furlongs. And I think that that's a huge risk to be taking when you're looking at such a skinny price. In my opinion as well, when he ran at Longchamp last time, he looked like he was treading water late on. And I just wonder whether 27 days with the shipping over here and the major question mark about going around a bend, you know, that's a big question mark. And the other thing is that he does his best work on the lead. Against American speed, you've got the likes of AG Bullet in here. Cogburn's probably going to go. He might be out of his comfort zone here. And at the prices, yes, he's a live contender, but do I want to be getting heavily involved with him? Probably not.
You mentioned AG Bullet, and this one ties into one of our sponsors for this Breeders' Cup season, our friends at Millridge Farm, AG being the chemical symbol for silver. Very appropriate for the brilliantly fast gray filly. Fastest filly for sale in the upcoming sales cycle. She's got a 106 buyer on her sheet. Our friends at Millridge selling her at the upcoming Phasing Tipton sale. Not an easy assignment in the turf sprint, but they're going to probably know her early.
Oh, for sure. I mean, she's probably going to be setting the pace. And, you know, I mean, you look at the speed figure she ran at Kentucky Downs 2-back. That fits in here, really. You know, she's a live contender. I think she's currently around 14-1 or so overseas. Definitely a contender. How much did that race at Keeneland take out of her last time? That's going to be a slight question mark, though. But I can definitely see her holding on for a slice.
Let's get into one that you know personally, the work you've done with the Graham Motion Yard. I'm going to make you, I can say it now, but I'm going to make you pronounce it.
No, I'm going to make you pronounce it.
Izzy Vungu Vungu.
Close enough. Izzy Vungu Vungu, yeah.
I was close.
Close enough.
Give me the backstory on this one.
Yeah, so he's got a huge fan following over in South Africa. I think I'm right in saying that they might be bringing the entire South African rugby team over to see him. I mean, it's crazy. And back in Fairhill, we've had so many press coverages and videos from their fan base overseas. He's a really big deal over there. And such a cool horse as well. Obviously, a multiple grade one winner back in his native South Africa. And he ran with plenty of credit when he won at Colonial first time out, but I think he's going to run a much, much stronger race on Saturday, because you've got to factor in the fact that he had to travel over. He did months in quarantine before that race, and we had to basically start from scratch from him. He was only working his way back up to peak fitness there. It was his first experience of American style turf racing, and since that race, he's really developed. He's training lights out at the moment. We're recording this show on Friday, October 25th. He has his final work tomorrow, and then he'll ship over here on Sunday. And the other thing that you've got to factor in, which goes for Beach Bomb, who's another South African shipper who'll be running in the filly and mare turf, is that these South African horses are now just coming into their summer. When he was running through our summer, that was the time when horses normally are out of condition because it's their winter. So he's really blossoming in himself at the moment. And I think it's almost inevitable that he's going to run a much, much faster speed figure and better race than he did at Colonial last time. And he's currently trading around 25-1 in overseas markets. And I think that's huge, huge value. I'm expecting a big run from this horse.
94 on the buyer scale. You're talking like that's just the tip of the iceberg for what this one's capable of. I'm going to ask you, going to rapid fire a couple of more in here. Then we're going to take a quick break, and I'm going to come back and hold your feet to the fire for your main selection in this race. Next, I want to go to one that I was interested in last year in the turf sprint. Feels like the bloom's a little bit off the rose in market terms anyway, with a runner like Motorious. Could you see a bounce back from Motorious though?
Yeah, to a degree I can. I think he's definitely got a chance of hitting the frame in this race. I mean, he's 5 out of 7 in the exacta, going a flat 5 furlongs. He's 3 for 3 over the Del Mar turf course, and he brings the second fastest bar speed figure into this race. You know, he's a cool, consistent horse. He has been kicked out of the water by Cogburn before, but his run in, you know, his run in this race last year, he was only beaten a length and a half in fifth, but he was boxed in. I mean, he had a horrendous trip through that race, and I'd say that he's equally as capable this year, if not better. And I can definitely see this horse sort of sitting a mid-pack trip and coming with a strong finish to get involved at the wire.
Star of Mystery, this 3-year-old filly, ran a hole in the wind back in the Quick Call. Didn't get it done around Keeneland in the Franklin, despite a bold late run. What shot do you give her? Is the 5 maybe too sharp for her with her closing running style?
Yeah, I think it is. I think she's going to get too far back in this race. Europeans, and the same goes for Bradsell as well, they've only won this race once, even though they typically dominate turf races at the Breeders' Cup. And at Del Mar, they're 0-5 in the money. I know that's a small sample size, but they were some fancied horses that they brought over, the likes of Marsha, Emeraldiana, even Glass Slippers, who then won the this race at Keeneland another year. And I just think that she is going to get too far back. And also, I just have huge reservations about taking a 3-year-old filly taking on older males. That's a huge, huge ask. And as we saw at Keeneland last time, you know, over 5.5 furlong, she might have broken from the rail that day, but, you know, she just gives herself too much to do. And a sharp 5 furlongs at Del Mar, I can't see it.
One more I need to ask you about. My daughter, a huge fan of the sitcom The Big Bang Theory, Howard Wolowitz, named after a character on there. Progressive profile, won the grade 1 at Kentucky Downs. Do you give him any chance here?
Absolutely, I give this horse a chance. I really do. And he's currently trading around 25-1 overseas. And if I was still living in England, I'd be getting involved each way on that one for sure. He instantly became in-the-money eye-catcher when he ran in the Pony Stakes at Saratoga 2-back, because that was only his third start, his first start on turf, and quite frankly, he should have won the race. He got murdered in the stretch. Next time out, Kentucky Downs, got the job done really impressively. Now, I actually saw this horse for the first time yesterday here at Del Mar on the track. And boy, oh boy, is this a nice looking son of a gun. He looks fit. He looks primed and ready to run. He brings the third fastest by speed figure into this race. And I don't think we've seen the best of him yet. I can see him sitting a stalk and pounce trip. You know, he can be close enough, but doesn't need the lead by any means. And I think he fits in here really nicely. This is a live contender, a big price for sure.
Glad you put in a plug for the Eye Catchers. Amazing work you've been doing as part of the free In the Money Media newsletter as well. And you can sign up, and it doesn't cost a thing, inthemoneypodcast.com/email for that one. And you may at some point be prompted to sign up for the Plus service, for which Will also does fantastic work. We're going to be back with Will's idea of the winner, or at least idea of the top selection in terms of betting for this year's Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. But first, want to remind folks that this video brought to you by our friends at Twin Spires. You can now play the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge at Twin Spires. Register directly through Twin Spires Tournaments by visiting the BCBC Tournament page over at twinspires.com. Now it's time for the rubber to meet the road, my friend. What's your idea? As of now, we'll give you a little bit of leeway to change based on things you see, the way the market changes between now and the big race. But your best idea right now for this Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint?
Well, you called him the best turf sprinter we've ever seen in America. I didn't go quite that far, but it's very hard to pose Cogburn in here. He's simply the best horse in the race. He's won over 6 furlongs. He's won over 5 furlongs. He's won uphill. He's won on flat tracks. I don't see how they're going to beat him. If he breaks, he wins. 7-4 currently overseas. If you are overseas and listening to this, take advantage of that because he's probably going to be odds on over here.
Love it. You mentioned a couple of each way runners. Who would be your top one at a big price? You're going to go with the home team?
Yeah, I'd throw Howard Wolowitz underneath there and Izzy Vungavungu, both at 25-1 currently. And I think that lands a nice trifecta.
Love it, Will. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks, PDF.
Kenny, have you got any new tattoos lately?
I'm going to get a Derby Oaks tattoo.
There you go.
Yeah, it's... they call me Mc... Some of my friends call me McDouble now. Thad Ackle. Thad Ackle calls me McDouble. Mac Double.
Well, I tell you what, when we get off, you need to get on the Jockey Club website and reserve that name immediately.
Okay. Probably needs to be a McKenzie Colt.
Yeah, well, hey, there's nothing wrong with that, apparently.
Yeah.
Kenny, wanted to talk a little bit about the big horse. And you know, you and I have talked about it, and I know we've joked about it, where I was overly impressed with who she was as an athlete, the races she won, how she won them, how impressive she won them. But the one thing was her figures prior to the Preakness, I'm sorry, not the Preakness, the Travers, were just a little bit light. But she wasn't really being pushed. She was finally pushed, and she ran a huge number. Then she came back and with some trouble in the Delaware Oaks and kind of regressed a little bit from a number standpoint. Why is everything I said just now nonsense?
You're talking about the Cotillion, the not the Delaware
Yeah,
Oaks.
Cotillion. Excuse me, the Delaware Oaks, the Cotillion.
Yeah, that's a grade three.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
You know, the Cotillion's a race that we didn't do much with her in between. We gave her a couple easy half miles, and we, you know, actually that racetrack over there is a bit of a trap. You can bring a really good horse over there and get beaten. And I told Brian before the race, I said, there's two ways you get beat here. One, you let a horse get an easy lead and you can't run him down. And I thought that Mark Hennick's filly, I believe it's Gunsong, was the filly that could do that because she had a race over the track. And I do think it's an advantage having a race over that track. And I said, the only other way you're going to get beat is if they box you in, slow it down, not let you out, and you can't get there. And, of course, that almost happened. And he came back and he says, wow, every move I made was the wrong one. But you got it done. And I just think that's a testament to her courage and talent that she was able to get there irregardless. But, this staff's a whole nother deal. And I've always likened young horses to, you know, when they're two-year-olds, they might be all state. And when they're three-year-olds, they might be, you know, college, top college. But when you go older horses, you're going pro. I mean, these horses are so experienced and so proven talented that it's a different level. And she's going to have to step up and run a big one. And I think she's perfectly capable, but there are no givens. And it looks like it's going to be a big field, too. So we got our work cut out for us.
In terms of, you know, one of the things that I've thought about with her is that, you know, in comparing her to Idiomatic, who those two will be at the top of the market, is that we kind of know who Idiomatic is because she's a mature, she's been in the pros for a while, but Torpedo Anna is growing up. How much has she grown up since the Travers, since the Kentucky Oaks?
Well, we watched her blossom this summer. I mean, she's just a big, strong filly. I mean, that's certainly to be expected with all she's accomplished, but you know, I've actually been away from her quite a bit lately because I had the Keeneland September sale, and then I flew up for the Cotillion, spent some time up there for that, and then I had to work the Tattersall sale in England, and then I worked the Phasic sale. I'm actually flying to New York tonight, and so I'm excited to see her the next few days, and certainly I'm going to oversee the workout up there, although the team could probably do it without me. It's still fun to go to Saratoga. It's going to be, I'm sure, a little cooler than I'm used to. But everything they're telling me is that she's doing better than ever. Of course, Danny's the ultimate optimist who gets on her. You know, that's typical Danny. Danny's one of the most positive people ever. But I'm excited to see her and see what her coat looks like and see what her weight looks like, because I will have, I have, like I said, I've been kind of busy with these yearling auctions and have stepped back. And she's already shows to be a big, strong filly anyway. But I think you'll see that she'll even mature more next year with a little bit of a window of a break on the other side of the Breeders' Cup. And when there is every intention to race her next year.
Well, Kenny, that's exciting. I'm excited to see her next year. I'm excited to see her in a couple of weeks. I feel like we're in store, and you probably don't want it this way, but I feel like we're in store for a little Beholder Songbird, young, old, stretch duel, but maybe the three-year-old to win this time.
Well, fingers crossed on that, but, you know, like, there's a Japanese horse in the race that's never lost.
Yep.
7 for 7, but none of those were graded. I'm not sure what their grading system is over there. And some of the other ones, it looks like on paper, but, you know, these things, they're just, you don't know how she'll handle the track, although she's handled everyone we've ever put her on. And I think Brad's filly is ultra consistent, but you can't give her an easy lead because she'll take advantage of it. And I think we're probably going to need to some extent, stalk or even go with her, because I think we're perfectly capable of going with her.
It's exciting. Kenny, I appreciate you taking the time, and good luck. And let me know when you get that tattoo.
It sounds good. I haven't been brave enough yet, but I might get it done. My daughter got one and she said, "Dad, when are you going to do that?" I said, "When I get time."
Thanks, Kenny.
All right. Take care, Jonathan.
So happy to be joined on this segment by a man we've been fortunate to have the last several years on these Monster Pods and elsewhere on the In the Money Media Network. A man I'm proud to call a colleague at Sky Sports Racing, and you know him from many other venues as well. If your eyes are open and you follow horse racing, he's MC Yeehaw himself, Matt Chapman. What's up, Matt?
Yeehaw! Peter, great to see you. I know you're not at the Breeders' Cup this time around, and it's kind of not the Breeders' Cup without Peter Fornatale, to be quite frank, but we're going to try and make the most of it. And I'm looking forward to, because I don't know, like, people might think that we, you know, have been preparing this, but I don't know what you're going to say. And I'm really interested to hear your views as well. So excited.
Let's start by talking about not the defending champion, because there was a year in between, but we do have a former champion in this race in the form of Rebel's Romance. I think it's fair to say that he sets the standard in many ways. How do you evaluate? We're going to come to you at the end of the video for your official selection, but just generally speaking, how do you evaluate his chance? How is he relative to the horse we saw at the Breeders' Cup a couple of years ago?
Well, he's still right up there. I've always been a great believer in that, you know, not every horse is going to be brilliant in every country. And Rebel's Romance, probably his worst country, is the country that he's trained in. But I've always thought that that's down to pace, the way races are run, etc. You know, a lot of our horses, for instance, go off to Australia and they're not very good over here and they suddenly become champions. Via Sestina would be a classic example. He's just won the Cox Plate. And often that's because of the way the pace of the races are run in different countries. And I just think Rebel's Romance is a horse that's very much favoured by the pace of races in countries away from the UK. Look, he's won it before. He stays well. He goes on any ground. He's already proven this year that he's just about as good as he's ever been. I see absolutely no reason why he won't be banging the mix. He could have had a little bit of a better draw, like something 4-8 rather than 11. But at the end of the day, he's not one of those rocket bang out and make the running horses. He's not a deep closer. He's not an Arazi or something. So he's just a normal racehorse. He's kind of bomb proof. And he'll just slot in behind the leaders. And I think he's got a great chance of being in the mix again. He's a proper Godolphin horse in that he is a globe-trotting champion.
Let's talk about some of the key opposition. And we'll start with some other horses coming from the UK. Emily Upjohn, a bit of a surprise entrant in this. John Gosden saying that he doesn't really like the mile and three-eighths configuration of the filly and mare turf, too draw dependent. He gets a cozy inside draw in this spot. Is she good enough, though?
I think she is good enough for the Peak. She's about £5 behind her best form, although arguably she's run two huge races under Kieran Schumacher this season. Look, this is a tricky one for me because I think it's really harsh on Schumacher that he's not on board. It's like Dettori and Gosden, they just can't leave each other alone. Like, it's like they've been girlfriend and boyfriend and they split up and then every 6 months they haven't found someone new and they go and have another night out and then they have a bit of a good time together and then they realise that it was all a disaster to start with and they had to split up because Frankie didn't want to be in the UK and so they go their separate ways and then 6 months later they have another night out. They just can't stop. And I feel that's really harsh on Kieran Schumacher, who got a great tune out of this horse in the Pretty Polly in Ireland when he almost stole the race won by Blue Stocking, who would go and win the Arc. A lot of people thought Schumacher went too early that day, but actually, with the benefit of hindsight, as with so much in horse racing, what it showed was that it was an enterprising ride, almost allowed him to beat the Arc winner. She ran really well in the Vermeer behind the Arc 1-2. I'm not sure about her at this track, though, Peter. I might be wrong about this, but she's a great big, gangly, quirky thing. And going around tight bends at Delmar, look, it's either going to make her or she's going to hate it. I'm in the hate it camp, but that might be because I'm so biased about the jockey situation. So It's a hard one for me, but I don't fancy her.
I hear you about the jockey situation. I've done this whole write-up I was so proud of for our friends at AtTheRaces.com about Emily Upjohn and the filly and mare turf and what a great story it was going to be to see Kieran Schumacher, you know, justifying the connections, sticking with him, and then all of a sudden she's not in the race and he's not on her back. And
Pete, this jockey thing's crazy as well. They've done it with Inspiral. They took Schumacher off. They put Ryan all on. He was just as bad on Inspiral because it's not the jockey, it's the horse. Like 99 out of 100 in horse racing, it's the horse when you're dealing with these absolute elite athletes. It's ridiculous. But as I say, look, to be fair, there is some logic to this. The last jockey to win on Emily Upjohn was Frankie Dettori a long time ago now in the Coronation Cup, beat Westover, and that's pretty good form. Westover was close to around the best colt at the time. He ran well in the Arc de Triomphe against Ace Impact. You know, that was good form. And it's Dettori at the end of the day. I mean, look, I see it like this now. They've done Schumacher a favour because she's not going to win. If she got beat, everyone would say it was Schumacher's fault. So I think they've done him a favour, but it's in Spiral all over again. And how did that work out?
Let's talk about JRB. You mentioned the sharp turns being maybe a concern for Emily Upjohn. Based on the way this one got around Chester, a tight left-handed course, wouldn't have been my first pick for him. Obviously, there are bits of form that fit here. Serious contender, this French bred three-year-old?
He's got the best draw. Stall five, I think. He is the one horse who's drawn to perfection. Actually, probably Luxembourg as well. But certainly JRB, no excuses. Sean Levy traveling over. He arrives, depending on when you listen to this, on Wednesday. And he's looking forward to this horse. It's funny, isn't it? Brian Meehan, when it comes to Breeders' Cup runners, you might say in Europe, oh, it's Brian Meehan, we'll rule him out, you know, against the elite. But when it comes to Breeders' Cup, he has a tremendous record. He won this race with Red Rocks and Dangerous Midge. And let's face it, Red Rocks and Dangerous Midge were not worldies in any ways whatsoever. This is an improving horse. And he won't be my fancy, but I would not be surprised at all if he ran really well, because there's nothing not to like about him. I think your point is a good one, though. He's quite a big horse, a bit sort of oaf-like round the bends. Will he be suited to Delmar? I don't know. But then if a horse like Yabir could win a Breeders' Cup turf wherever it's run, it kind of makes you think you can overthink it sometimes.
You name-checked Luxembourg when talking about the good draws. Looking at the USA morning line and seeing 12-1 on a Ryan Moore, Aidan O'Brien runner, that at least wants me to take a second look. Should I keep looking?
Well, he's a Coronation Cup winner, which, of course, Emily Upjohn is as well. But, you know, the funny thing about Luxembourg is he won't be many people's fancy in this race. But he's absolutely one of those that if he won it, no one in the world would be surprised. Like, go back to his two-year-old days. He won the Futurity at Doncaster. Now, that's the Derby trial, effectively, for two-year-olds who might become Derby horses. He was sent off at 9-2 for the 2,000 guineas, and he finished third in the 2,000 guineas. You know, this has always been an absolute Group 1 horse from juvenile days to today. He's got it in him to run a big race. Is he better at a mile and a quarter or a mile and a half? In Europe, that's debatable. Around here, you'd say the trip is ideal. He'll go forward. He's a roughie. Well, when I say roughie, he's not really a roughie price, but he's a horse that, I'm just going to repeat myself, if he won, no one would be surprised in the least, although I find myself having not to select him.
Interesting. We got to talk about the other Aidan O'Brien runner in here, the filly Wingspan. Really seemed to take a new step up to a new level last time. Could it have been soft ground, or could she be a three-year-old filly getting good late in the year? I think she could get a little lost in the USA betting here. I have half a mind to keep her in the mix. Am I nuts with Wingspan? Was it the ground last time, or could she be ready for a close-up?
First of all, that's probably the line of this podcast so far, isn't it? Nuts with Wingspan. I like what you've done there for Natali. That is why we miss you. Look, first of all, she's ditched by Ryan Moore. She's got a nasty draw. Everything makes it hard for Wingspan. It was a very good run against Kalpana. And let's not forget that Kalpana's performance has effectively retired the art winner Blue Stocking, because I think if Kalpana hadn't won the filly mare at Ascot on Champions Day, the chances are Blue Stocking would have remained in training. But now they think they've got an art course in Kalpana, so they don't need Blue Stocking anymore. We're slightly repeating ourselves here. I mean, am I surprised if Wingspan goes and runs after a second at Ascot? No. Do I think she will win it? No. I think she'll be in the first six. I don't fancy her to hit the frame.
Gotcha. First six isn't horrible, though. We might be able to work with that at the right price.
Now, people who've watched us before, Pete, will be delighted to get one in the first six.
Let's talk about the American contingent. In the past, we've come on here and talked about the turf, and you've told me there's absolutely no way any of these horses can make the frame. Do you have similarly negative views about this group of USA horses, or do you give any count to one like Far Bridge, who's won a couple of grade ones on North American soil in a row and even turned away some Appleby runners?
Well, he's trained by Christoph Clement, so he's not at least trained really by an American, is he? So that gives him some sort of chance. You're absolutely right. Look good at Saratoga. Look good at Belmont at the Big A. I love that. Just the name is just so much better than Belmont at a Big A. I love that. But realistically, I had this conversation actually with... who did I have it with? I'm trying to think who I had this with. Anyway, I think it was Todd Pletcher about City of Troy and the Classic. I was saying, like, we just come to the turf races. We basically ignore you. Do you do the same when it comes to us in the dirt? And he said he didn't, but I could tell he did. but to answer your question, Far Bridge, not for me.
Oh, that's very funny. Oh, quick word on the Japanese runners, then we'll get a word from our sponsor and we'll come back with the verdict from you, Matt. Japanese go double-handed here. Do you see a contender in the bunch?
Well, if there is one, again, it's a bit like a Rebel's Romance horse because Sharir is a six-year-old. I couldn't believe Sharir was only six. I mean, if he'd been 60, I'd thought it was possible. He seems to have run in everything in just about every country, Dubai, obviously Japan, etc. He is a tough nut. He's in pretty good form. His second, it was quite some time ago now, but his second at Maidan to Rebels Romance was clearly a good run in the Dubai Shima Classic. And if you fancy Rebels Romance a little bit, well, you have to fancy Sharir a little bit. And I don't think this is the best turf of all time. I mean, is this like a Foulbrave, you know, that kind of era of Breeders' Cup turfs? I don't think so. So I think Sharia's in the mix. I don't really fancy Rushen Park. And most of the others, I think, are American. And we know those can't win.
I was waiting for that. Let's get a quick word from our sponsor, our friends over at Twin Spires. They're back in the handicapping contest game in a big way with the Kentucky Derby Betting Challenge returning. You can play in feeders and qualifiers very often over there. Go to twinspires.com, check the tournaments tab for all the information, and you can also play in the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge with our friends over at twinspires.com. Okay, now's the time. You've said positive things about a number of runners in here, but we're holding your feet to the fire. Who wins the turf?
Well, firstly, I've got to say that absolutely do not play that competition because I could do with that 250 grand. And if I'm the only player, there's a chance I'll win it. So, no, it looks great. I'll be having a go myself. I'm going to keep this simple. I think the two old boys, Rebels Romance for the win, Sharia for a place, are the way to go here. As a better in races, Pete, and these types of races where you're dealing with top-class horses, none of these have been given sort of easy runs that you've been able to spot or whatever, although I think there are one or two at Breeders' Cup. Star of Mystery, for instance, I thought was given an absolute shocker stateside last time, runs in the sprint, and I think could go well at a price, but we're not going to preview that right now. I got off on a tangent already. But Rebels Romance and Sharia, for me, are the two against the field, which probably means that Emily Upjohn and Frankie will beat the Galloping Giraffe JRB.
You gave me a tangent. I'll give you one, or give you an opportunity for another one. The City of Classic. The City of Troy win the Classic.
I'll be betting Sierra Leone each way, which I know a lot of people stateside will think I'm an idiot because the horse looks like a monkey, doesn't really put it in. In fact, I did message Coolmore a few weeks ago and I said, why don't you put Dettori on Sierra Leone? Because I feel that he might be a man who could sort that horse out. But the message back was that basically the trainer of the horse has the say on the jockey. But I did think Dettori on Sierra Leone in the Classic was an interesting way in for that horse. But I think he's massively overpriced. There's got to be a pace on in this Breeders' Cup Classic. There has to be a gallop. This horse keeps plodding on and I think either doesn't want to win or is finding ways of getting beat. But in this Classic, if Fierceness and if City of Troy gets out, they are going to go hard. And it might just allow Sierra Leone to fall in. So again, to answer your question, Pete, I mean, no one in the world doesn't want City of Troy to win this race, I don't think. But am I going to select City of Troy? Well, that's different because the head and the heart are different in this game. My heart wants City of Troy. My head says have an each-way bet on Sierra Leone.
Great stuff, Matt, as ever. Have fun out there. PTF back with you for the Breeders' Cup Monster Pod Series. And of all the ones I'm fortunate to be doing this year, this is the one, I'm not going to lie, I'm the most excited about. The guest is great, but the race is really one to savor. We bring in now from NBC Sports, Randy Moss. Randy, how are things?
I love the Monster Pod. You know what I like about it, Pete? On NBC, when Jerry Bailey and I are doing our stuff, right, when we're doing our shtick, it's TV. And everything is scripted, not scripted, but everything is formatted like to the 15-second blocks. And we've got to say what we want to say in a very concise manner and very abbreviated. And there's a lot of stuff that gets left on the table, quite frankly, because there's no time for it.
Right.
You know, this gives me a chance to actually sort of dive into the nuts and bolts and talk a little bit more about these races, especially the Classic. It's great.
This international clash is the first thing. And I'll ask you from a figure-making point of view, especially, how do you try to compare apples to oranges when you're looking at speed figures from Ireland and Japan and the USA?
It's difficult, if not impossible. I mean, there are ways to look, for example, at racing post ratings and time form ratings, and you compare them to buyer figures over the years that they've run in the Breeders' Cup, and you can come up with some sort of adjustment like minus 14, minus 15, et cetera, et cetera. But the problem there is that the time form and the racing post numbers are class based and not speed based. So It's not really apples to apples, but if you do that, then I think you come to the conclusion that City of Troy, for example, it is capable of running as fast as Fierceness has been running in his races, if not just a touch faster, if his form translates from the grass to the dirt, and that is literally the $7 million question.
So that's interesting. It sounds to me like if they all run their best race from a figure perspective, you know, putting aside all the other questions, if they all run their best race, this idea of City of Troy being the favorite doesn't sound crazy to you. It sounds like it actually makes a degree of sense in that specific way of looking at it.
But that's a big if. Yeah. historically, that's a huge if, right? Because, like, look, you can dive into it this way. And I've gone down this rabbit hole, Pete. I mean, I've got oodles and oodles of stats and stuff. For example, in his career, right, Aiden O'Brien, arguably, possibly the most successful horse trainer of all time, okay, is 2 for 75 on dirt.
Wow.
Those two wins were Johannesburg in the 2001 Breeders' Cup Juvenile and Mendelsohn in the 2018 UAE Derby. Okay. If you dot now, why is Aiden O'Brien 2 for 75 on turf? Okay. Greatest trainer possibly in the history of the world. Clearly, Aiden O'Brien is capable of being a top class dirt trainer. But the horses that he's been given to race on dirt from Coolmore tend to be horses that are bred exclusively to run on grass. And we know in this country the huge distinction between grass horses and dirt horses. And you can sometimes get horses that are capable just as good on both, but it is very much the exception rather than the rule. Okay. So there's that. That's why Aiden O'Brien has such a poor record on dirt. Now look at the two that he won, Mendelsohn and Johannesburg. Okay. Johannesburg was by Hennessy out of an Ogygian mare. That's dirt on top of dirt, right? Mendelsohn was by Scat Daddy. Okay. And he was out of a mare who was almost strictly dirt. That was really dirt form on top of dirt form. You look at the two near misses that Aiden O'Brien and Coolmore have had in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Giant's Causeway was bred to be a better dirt horse than a grass horse. The other one was Declaration of War, who was Warfront on the top and a dirt horse on the bottom. Dirt on top of dirt. Those four horses, the two that he's won with on dirt and the two that he almost won the Classic with, were both really very well bred for dirt, top and bottom. All right, now look at City of Troy. On the top, you've got Justify. Hey, that's 5-star. That's no problem. But on the bottom, you've got Together Forever, the mare, who's a Galileo mare. That entire female family is 100% turf. And Galileo, as great as he is or was, you know, one of the greatest stallions in history, had only a 5% career record on dirt. And even that is inflated because the way the stats were calculated worldwide back in the day, they were combining for quite a while. They were combining synthetic all-weather with dirt. And we know that's a big difference. Yep. So it's actually a lot less than 5% for Galileo. He was a terrible dirt sire. Okay. So now with City of Troy, you don't have dirt on top of dirt. You've got dirt on top of grass. Now, what does that mean? We don't know. That's a huge, huge question mark. Now, this may be overblown. Geneticists will tell you that it doesn't necessarily mean anything, but it might. Visually, City of Troy looks a lot more like a Galileo than he looks like Justify. Justify was the big, burly, hyper-muscular, chestnut, statuesque. You looked at him, he's like, wow. Galileo was he was athletic, extremely athletic. But he was a normal-looking horse, maybe even slightly smaller than normal. Yeah, he wasn't the kind of horse you would look at and say, oh, that horse is an all-time great. No, he was. But you know, he was his determination that he passed on to his offspring. The constant, desire to run well. Aiden O'Brien's talked about that a lot. And this horse looks more like a Galileo than he looks like a Justify. Now, will that matter? I don't know. But and there's one other thing, too, real quick.
Please.
They have, over the years, as a, no pun intended, justification for running some of these grass horses in the Breeders' Cup Classic and trying to win the Classic, which Coolmore has tried for years and years and years. One of the explanations that Aiden O'Brien has always given is that these horses that he's trying in the Classic have a high cruising speed. Okay. Now he's saying the same thing about City of Troy. Sort of has a lot of pace. He is the pace to be a dirt horse. He has a high cruising speed. But we've seen over the years that that doesn't necessarily mean anything, because dirt horses are bred genetically to power through sand, to power through dirt. Grass horses tend to be, this is, you know, a generalization, but grass horses tend to be scopier, taller, longer, longer striding. They can skim over the top of the grass. When they have to try to power through sand, it's extremely fatiguing, especially if they're rushed in the early part of a dirt race, because then you're taking some of their energy reserves away from them early to try to put them in position because of this belief that you have to be close on dirt. And then they're exhausted by the time they get to the quarter pole, because they're not really bred to power through the dirt anyway.
Right.
That's what we've seen time and time and time again. When these Coolmore horses run in the Kentucky Derby, when they run in the Breeders' Cup, they're rushed like crazy early to get in that good early position. Right. But they're exhausted by the time you get to the quarter pole. So this is going to be fascinating to see how City of Troy handles the dirt.
Looked at through that lens of the pedigree of the history of these Coolmore runners, quite a different view about this horse being the favorite. It sounds borderline insane when you put it that way. What do you think of his chances? What price should this horse be? What price will he be in the tote?
See, that's the important distinction when you're gambling, which is what we're talking about here. That's why we're doing this podcast, I assume. Yes, City of Troy. I can't tell you that City of Troy has no chance to win, because if he does favor the Justify side more than the Galileo side, and he handles the dirt exceptionally well, and if he gets kickback, he handles kickback exceptionally well, and if he's got the tactical speed to put himself right in a great spot, yes. City of Troy, he's clearly an extremely talented horse, and it wouldn't be shocking if City of Troy, if all this transpires, if City of Troy wins the Breeders' Cup Classic, right? But based on what we were talking about and the history behind this and the Galileo on the bottom side of the pedigree, he probably deserves to be about 5 or 6 to 1. And if he goes off at 5 to 2, that's not good value at all. Historically, when you look at it that way.
Let's move on to the Japanese contingent. They come here three-handed. We've got the three-year-old Forever Young, tough trip in the Kentucky Derby, showed a lot of heart. He's come back and won since. We've also got Ushba Tesoro and Dermasotagake, last year's second. They both have run recently over in Japan. How do you evaluate this triumvirate? Do we have serious contenders in this bunch?
Let's start with Dermasotagake, the runner-up in last year's Breeders' Cup Classic. To me, and again, this is a bit of a slippery slope, but you got to try to separate these horses in some way. He looks a little off form. He didn't run as well in Dubai, in the Dubai World Cup. Now, there was an excuse they gave. I guess on the plane ride over, he was attacked on the plane by another horse and had an eye injury. Leading up to the Dubai World Cup, and things just didn't do very, he didn't do very well in that interim. And therefore he didn't run very well. And then, but in his prep in Japan with Ushba Tesoro in the same race, Dermasotagake was in a good forward position and then came up completely empty. Okay. That's a prep. So he's liable to just really take a big step forward. And that's what they're saying they expect from him. But that's a leap. Okay. Ushba Tesoro, very consistent. He's run extremely well. He ran pretty well in the Breeders' Cup last year. Got beat a couple of lengths. He's run well at Saudi, run well in Dubai. But to me, he's like 2 or 3 lengths behind the Fiercenesses and the Sierra Leones and the Forever Youngs. Okay. And also, he comes from way back in the pack. He almost always breaks slowly. And there's not a ton of pace, I think, in this year's Breeders' Cup. OK, Arthur's ride probably will set the pace, and he's capable of running huge numbers. We've seen on his very best day. Skippy Longstocking won't be too far behind. Fierceness, if all goes well, will be right there as well. And who knows about City of Troy, but the pace should not be super fast, which I think is what Ushba Tesoro would need to be able to win a race like this. And then there's Forever Young. Look, arguably, you can definitely make the case that he was the best horse in the Kentucky Derby, right? I mean, almost everybody saw that he probably should have been moved up to second, except the Churchill Downs stewards. They apparently didn't see it. This horse has lost once, and that's the only race he lost. And he was beaten narrowly in a 3-horse photo finish in the Kentucky Derby in a race that he might have been best. We've seen Fierceness now. We've seen Sierra Leone now come back and run buyer speed figures in the 111, 110, 109 range. There's no reason to think that Forever Young isn't still just as good as they are, if not just a tiny bit better. So the way I look at the handicapping of this race, Pete, is I think we've seen that on his best day with his best trip, Fierceness is a little bit better than Sierra Leone. Okay. I'm a little concerned about the draw for Fierceness because in the Jim Dandy and in the Travers, Fierceness got a nice antiseptic outside trip, stalking, rated very nicely in the Travers, better than he'd ever rated before. Looked like a much more professional horse in those two races than he did, for example, in the Kentucky Derby. But if he's drawn inside and, you don't know. You might get the old Fierceness. He hasn't had to overcome adversity, really, still. And if that happens, if he gets an inside draw, let's say 1, 2, 3, to me, then it might shift in my mind to Forever Young. Interesting. As being the horse to play.
Interesting.
And what price do you think he'll be? 9 to 2?
I feel... It's so hard to know what they're going to do on the tote if it's going to mirror international markets. But my gut would be a Forever Young 5 to 1-ish.
Okay.
And then Fierceness a little bit shorter than that, 7 to 2, 4 to 1, right? Does that feel about right?
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with Sierra Leone either. But the fact that there's not a ton of speed in this race. I mean, if they were capable, if there were horses in here, I'd say you had Nick's Go, one of those kind of, or you had Life Is Good, right? And you could count on a 46 flat or 46 and one, or maybe a speed duel to go 45 and change. Oh, Sierra Leone would be, that would be like a garden spot for Sierra Leone. But if they're going 47 and one, right? Even at a mile and a quarter at Del Mar, with the short stretch at Del Mar, which doesn't play into the favor of horses like Sierra Leone and horses like Ushba Tesoro, that becomes a little tougher, I think, for a horse like Sierra Leone.
Is there anything in the older horse division in North America that might interest you as a betting vehicle of any kind in here, whether that's to get into the lower rungs for verticals or potentially even pull off the upset?
Yeah, Arthur's Ride. If he very well could be 10, 12 to 1. He's sort of the forgotten horse right now after the Jockey Club Gold Cup. And I think, I'm an old school. I've been around a long time. And it pains me to have to handicap and have to say that, maybe Arthur's Ride reacted in the Jockey Club Gold Cup.
You don't even want to say the word bounce.
I know. I don't want to say that. I don't want to say the B word. From his fast race in the Whitney. Okay. And there's also this, the Whitney was on a muddy track and
seemed to be favoring speed a little bit that day.
Yeah. And you don't know how much that played into Arthur's Ride because he was a different horse in the Whitney than he was in the Jockey Club Gold Cup. He was, he ran actually on the pace numbers. He ran faster early in the Whitney than he did in the Jockey Club Gold Cup. And yet he had nothing left. When Highland Falls ran up to him and ran past him at the quarter pole at Saratoga in the Jockey Club. But we know he's capable, at least, of a big number. they'll probably leave him alone on the front end. They won't be all that concerned. It's not going to be like these riders are going to say, oh, I got to go after Arthur's ride, right? If you're Johnny Velasquez on Fierceness, you're not going to move early just because Arthur's ride is in front. And so if he gets that kind of pace that he likes and gets in his rhythm, and he's the same Arthur's ride that we saw in the Whitney, at 10 to 1, at 12 to 1, I think he's a horse that you could use in all sorts of exotics.
And he could be all of that and more,
yeah,
depending on how this international money affects things parimutuelly. We should talk about the big surprise, pleasant surprise from sporting point of view at the pre-entries, seeing next. Many pundits, including myself, had said, wouldn't it be cool to see him in the classic? Well, now we're going to get to. So that's a cool story. But is he a contender?
You know, you can't blame him for trying. If he were mine, I wouldn't run him. I've said that before. It's clear on paper that Next stepped up into the elite level when they stretched him out to run him in what we would call marathon races. And the reason for that is pretty clear. It's because he was able to get into a nice, easy rhythm, a nice, easy pace. He's got tactical speed. He only had to go, 48, 49, galloping along in second and just using that stamina, just relentless gallop, and had with a great trip, and they just can't beat him in that scenario. But now he's going to be in a situation almost certainly where there's going to be four or five horses you would think they would probably be in front of him early.
Is that how it looks on pace figures? He
does. To me, it does. Yeah, Arthur's Ride should be in front of him. Skippy Longstocking should be in front of him. Fierceness, Mixtoe probably should be in front of him. He's been up close to the pace in almost all of his two-turn races in California, although I think he's a little bit cut below pace-wise horses like Arthur's Ride. City of Troy. They're going to ride City of Troy aggressively in the first part of the race.
Have to.
They always do. And when they bring these horses over to run on dirt. Next is going to be in a position that's completely different from what he's accustomed to being. And in a position that earlier in his career, he did not handle well at all.
Right.
So I can't be confident that we're going to see the same Next that we've been seeing.
I'm going to throw out a long shot to you to get your idea on. I might need a reality check on this one. More for underneath. But I'm a little bit intrigued by Newgate.
Yeah.
Simply because the assumption coming back in the California Crown was he was going to be a short horse. He was going to need a mile and a quarter to show his best. I thought he was against the grain of a racetrack that day that favored horses that were on or near. I feel like when you look at the 99 figure he earned through that lens, you could give him several points extra credit. Do you think he's one that could, I don't really think he can win, but if they go fast enough, if there's many horses whose best chance is to be on or near, even if the deepest closers can't get involved to win, I could see tired horses coming back and a runner like Newgate maybe getting a small piece at 25 to 1 on the tote. You buy
it? So could I. I have trouble seeing Newgate winning. Arthur's Ride has run the kind of race before that I think is going to be necessary to win the Breeders' Cup Classic, assuming that Fierceness and Sierra Leone and Forever Young, run their best races. Okay. I don't see that from Newgate, but I can see Newgate hitting the board. Definitely, I can see him hitting the board. I think his Santa Anita handicap and his California Crown were maybe even a touch better than they look on paper. And in the California Crown, what I liked about Newgate is not only was he coming off a layoff and he probably needed a race, but especially in the case of Newgate, when you look at him physically, he's a big, big, stout, burly kind of horse that is going to be more difficult to get fit off of workouts. And a race would really seem to do him a lot of good. That's what you would think looking at him physically. And so he's had that prep race now, and I do expect him to move forward. And on the buyer scale, I would expect from Newgate and Bob Baffert and Del Mar. I would expect Newgate to run in the 106 range or so.
This group is so good. That's not necessarily top three, but it sure gives you a shot at a big price.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what I would expect.
I've kept you long, but I have two more for you that you can sort of fold into one. Curious if you had another horse at a price to mention for potential inclusion. And I'm not going to officially hold your feet to the fire or anything this far out ahead of the draw, but I would love your lean as far as a potential selection goes. Which way are you leaning at the expected prices? Obviously, folks will watch the NBC broadcast and get much more from you closer to the time.
All right, so let's look at some of the other horses in here. Senor Buscador ran so poorly in the California Crown when they expected him to run well. I can't be confident at all about him. We've talked about Derma Sotogake coming off a couple of subpar races. Next, I can't have any confidence he's going to run as well as he's been running. Skippy Longstocking has occasionally run some big numbers. He ran it at Oaklawn. He ran the Charlestown Classic. But I just think he's a cut below the very best grade one horses. Pyrenees, I don't think is fast enough. I don't think Highland Falls is fast enough. And I don't think he'll get the same kind of trip that he got in the Jockey Club Gold Cup. We've seen enough of Tappet Trice to know that you can't trust him at all. Mixto, I don't think is fast enough. You know, I mean, you could make a case that Ushpa Tesoro at whatever price he's going to be, 10 to 1, 12 to 1, you know, might have a chance to clunk up for a third or fourth. He's a very consistent horse. He's battle-tested, battle-hardened. You know, I could see him running a 103, 104 and, you know, creeping into the superfecta that way. But other than that, you know, I don't really see a lot that we haven't talked about.
And in terms of a lean for a horse that might be a selection, where would you go with that?
I would say right now, pending the post position draw, it would be Fierceness over Forever Young. And I reserve the right to flip-flop those if Fierceness draws what I consider to be an unsatisfactory post.
I'm really interested to see how this is going to play out. Fantastic getting to spend time with you. Hey, if you're game, what, like we've done in the past, a little show with your partner in crime there, it'd be a ton of fun. So folks should subscribe to the In the Money Media YouTube channel to check out that and other exclusive content. Randy Moss, you're the best. Thank you so much.
All right, Pete. Look forward to seeing you coming up.
PTF back with you to talk about the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Turf. And to do it with me, I bring in a woman who's usually the one asking me the questions on Sky Sports stateside. But the roles are reversed here. Very happy to welcome to the In the Money airwaves, Kate Tracy. Kate, how are things?
So good, thanks, Peter. I know it's weird this way around, isn't it? The dynamic now of you asking me as the pundit, but it's quite nice to be on this side, to be honest. I feel like I'm kind of holding all the power now of information.
Don't abuse it. That's my only no. request. Let's talk about this year's Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Turf. I thought I was going to be all about Emily Upjohn in this spot. Sure sounds like she's going to be going to the turf, according to trainer John Gosden. Where does that leave us? Where should we start? Who's our horse to use as the way in?
Wide open now, isn't it? Like you say, Emily Upjohn with Frankie Dettori taking the ride, going to go for the Breeders' Cup turf instead, which has just meant that it has pushed this whole race wide open now. But I think we should probably start with Cinderella's Dream for Charlie Appleby, of course, sporting those Godolphin blue colours in here as well. And she's just a really likeable, really consistent type. She's won six of her seven now, including the Grade 2 Saratoga Oaks, the Grade 1 Belmont Oaks. And she did have the option of the Taylor Stakes at Woodbine or the QE2 Challenge Cup at Keeneland as well. But I do think it's quite notable that Charlie Appleby is sending her straight here now as a result. And of course, for all that she's this globetrotter and it's kind of difficult to weigh up form, she's got the verdict over She Feels Pretty in the Belmont Oaks. And that looked a really smart performance in isolation, let alone the fact that She Feels Pretty easily went to win the QE2 Challenge Cup at Keeneland. So the fact her dam won over 10 furlongs, it just suggests that she'll get further in time as well.
That's interesting to start with the Appleby runners, who, of course, have that USA form. How do the Europeans, do you think, stack up against that pair specifically? Are we looking, certainly not the strongest group from Europe we've seen, given some of the great ones over the years here, but are they serious contenders, the Euros?
Not really. They're likable types, but they've still just got their own little cruxes that need to come to the fore. And Content is probably one of those. Of course, Aidan O'Brien, who's won this race once in the past with Tuesday, or Tuesday, as you guys like to say, of course, as well. We're adding the CH in for my accent. But Content, though, I mean, she's a cool filly, but she's just her own worst enemy, where she's so keen. She won the Group One Yorkshire Oaks over a mile four, and it was thought by a lot of people that she was perhaps unlucky not to win the Irish Oaks prior to that. So she reversed the form with the winner of that at York. But then you thought, okay, she's going to go straight to the Breeders' Cup now. But she's had two more runs since York, and she's been disappointing in both of those. She was rotten keen when she went to Longchamp in the Prix de l'Opera over 10 furlongs, and that was in a first-time hood. Didn't help her. Had the hood taken off last time out. Race didn't play to her advantage whatsoever. She was still keen early as well. But what she really wants, though, is fast ground, probably a mile three, and she wants a good pace to aim at. So if you're talking about characteristics of a race that Content wants, this is ideal for her. It's just whether or not she behaves herself.
Yeah, not easy when we're looking at these prices a few days out to figure that out. I did want to ask your opinion of Soprano. I became a very big fan of hers at Royal Ascot. We did see her stateside, and was it a rock solid effort, I guess you'd say, but nothing that had me coming away from it thinking, oh, she's definitely going to step up in 3 weeks and win the filly and mare turf. Might I be underrating her?
No, I'm very much on the same wavelength as you. It was a solid effort without anything that was going to blow you away and think that she's going to be able to take a step up to this grade. I mean, she's probably a fair price, really. Nothing more, nothing less than where she is currently. And that was her first time stateside last time out in the aforementioned QE2 Challenge Cup at Keeneland. And running into She Feels Pretty, who we know how good She Feels Pretty is. And she got the added blinkers that day. Second win at the top level with her success, and she'll have a right chance going into December. She should as well, shouldn't she? But Soprano, she's had a good, consistent year. Group three winner, placing in the matron. She's probably group three, group two kind of filly now, really. But clearly she would have learned plenty from that experience last time out. And typical Euro, got away slowly and was always playing catch up after then. But she did stay on nicely and didn't shirk the issue. And she did come out of it with loads of credit. And the way that she stayed on would suggest she might get further, but you actually look at her pedigree. I don't know if she's going to get this trip.
Yeah, it's as much as I like her, I don't see her being a big part of my bets in this one. So we have our In the Money Plus service, where we have a ton of extra information on the Breeders' Cup, horse-by-horse write-ups. One of the things we have on there is figure equivalents for the European horses. My good friend Rob Dove, who we always call on the show, one of the top 10 pro punters in the UK today, puts this together. Folks interested can check it out at inthemoneypodcast.com/plus. But one of the interesting things as he was doing his figure equivalencies this year was on one of the runners in this race, Ylang Ylang, who, if you look at in terms of form figures, fits as a peripheral contender, at least for a race like this. But when you look at the raw kind of speed figures she's been running, looks on the outside looking in. Do you give her any count in this spot?
I don't like her at this price at all. It's really interesting you saying about the figures for her in here. And I would agree probably on the peripheral then for this. She hasn't fulfilled the potential that we wanted to see from her as a two-year-old last season, where she looked like she could be something really special in her first two runs. But then the wheels slightly came off for her before she obviously got back to winning ways with a Group One towards the end of last year. So it's tricky to know what to expect from her going into this season. But of course, she's yet to win in 2024. Fairly uninspiring figures from our point of view in that time as well. And it was interesting that Ryan Moore did choose to ride her over Content in the Prix de l'Opera at Longchamp, which of course was notable. She was well backed as a result. The step up in trip should have suited her, but she just found nothing off the bridle. So I can't trust her.
We're going to have a word from the sponsor of this video, and we'll come back with some selections for the filly and mare turf. Want to thank our friends over at Twin Spires for helping us out during this season of the Breeders' Cup, and remind you that they have a money-back offer over at Twin Spires. If your horse runs second or third on select Breeders' Cup races, you can opt in now over at twinspires.com. And you can also check out their tournament schedule when you're over there. They're back in the tournament game in a big way. Twinspires.com. Check out the tournaments and make sure to opt in for that money back for second and third promotion. Kate, let's get to our thoughts about who's going to win this race. I'll go first and I'll ask you if you think I'm out to lunch here or might be onto something. Warlike Goddess, talented mare. She's run in this race before. I thought looked like winning it at Del Mar 3 years ago when maybe making an early wide move to the lead. It eventually went to the Japanese runner, Loves Only You. Similar story, I thought, last time with Warlike Goddess, maybe making the lead a little bit too early against the boys in the grade one. Maybe here, with the right kind of ride, she could finally get her Breeders' Cup success in this filly and mare. Are you buying the case at all?
I am. I really am. I like her a lot in here. And I think that her price on our perspective, we've got her about 10 to 1 over here. I think that we're not treating her with enough respect with our prices. Because as you say, the fact that she's gone to take on the boys and now she's moving back in against her own sets. And when you don't have Emily Upjohn in here anyway, I did think that Bill and Watch Charge really looked like she could take full advantage of this. And she ran against the boys last year in the Breeders' Cup Turf, won by August Rodin. She doesn't mind taking on the boys. Gave Farbridge, as you say, a really good race in the Joe Hirsch Turf Classic last time out. And just entitles her a shot in what's a wide open year.
Do you have another you'd put up ahead of her as a top preference? Or perhaps something at a bigger price to maybe mess around with each way? Give me your idea of another interesting wager here.
Yeah, I have a few ways to play this where, again, you've inspired me, Peter, for this about having different ways to play. You don't have to just nail yourself down to one win only bet in here. I think if Wingspan, if she takes her place in this race, I think she's the most interesting Aidan O'Brien runner by a distance. She's so inexperienced still in terms of the fact she's only just run this season, but she's been set some pretty tough tasks. And last time out, her second behind Kalpana, that was in the British Champions Fillies and Mares Stakes, a Group 1 contest at Ascot. And Kalpana is potentially an absolute worldie. So for her to get within two lengths of her, she did have the run of the race and the soft ground did seem to really suit her. But if she takes up this engagement, regardless of Ryan Moore, whoever he rides, I thought Wingspan was definitely the most interesting Ballydoyle. I would give Warlike Goddess a huge chance to upset the Invaders for this one. But the ones who I also think are overpriced, Moira is surely overpriced in here for an each way play, just to run a similar race than she did last year here. And I think that last year's renewal might have been slightly tougher than this time around as well. And I also wouldn't put anyone off Anisette each way in here as well. She's about 20 to 1 with us. Consistent, likable type. And that third last time out, I know that she was only beaten a narrow margin, 3/4 length. Got the verdict over Didier in that, who's actually, well, I was going to say a shorter price. Actually, it's been reevaluated itself somewhat. They're about the same price, but Anisette, but Moira being the big each way play.
A lot of ideas from Kate, perfect for USA style exotics. And then you can shop if you're looking for that win only bet as you get closer and cherry pick from Kate's shortlist. Really appreciate having you on here today, and we'll see you here or at the football games.
Oh, hopefully one day I will be over for it. But no, it's an absolute pleasure. I've watched you for so long, Peter, and the Breeders' Cup is one of the biggest highlights of the entire year for us. So can't wait for it all.
Well, 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 it's the old record-breaking Breeders' Cup betting challenge champion, Sean Borman. Shawnee Roy, what's going on?
Not much, man. Just getting ready for next week.
Well, if for those who know your story, they'll know that the Breeders' Cup sprint last year was a big part of your victory. Not the whole part, but a big part of your victory. Do you have the warm and fuzzies like you did last year about an elite power gunite 2.0?
I do not yet. I didn't, to be fair, I didn't have them at this stage last year either. So something could come bubble up at any moment. But this, you know, I think it's a tough race this year, and it really depends on who shows up and who doesn't.
Well, who's kind of grabbed your attention so far that you at least have a little bit of interest in?
You know, I think, you know, the pace of this race is going to sort of dictate everything. If all the speed shows up, it's a completely different race than if two or three of them just show up. You know, as is right now, you've got to think the pace is going to be extremely fast. But there's no real good finisher in there. Maybe the two Japanese horses, but I sort of question if they're good enough, honestly. You know, so I'm looking at like who could be best of speed, who could sort of withstand some pressure and still finish a little bit. And you know, at the moment, I'm sort of leaning towards Mulliken as being that horse. I think he's really come into himself. He's run fast, you know, relatively fast early and late in his last two starts. The big concern would be, is he a 7 furlong horse? Can he translate that back down to 6? And I think he can, but you know, that's a wrinkle that this race, you know, has almost every year. It's like all the preps are at 7. So it makes it a little difficult, especially when a pace could be as fast as it could be this year.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like with horses like Skelly and Straight No Chaser and Mulliken and Raging Torrent, it projects to be a pretty quick pace. And at that 6 furlongs, I don't really feel like you see a lot of horses trying to rate. I feel like you just kind of let them roll and see what happens. Yeah. You know, as someone who focuses so much on LP, are there any horses in here that kind of stand out to you from an LP standpoint? And while you wrap your brain around that, I do want to say that I wish Domestic Product was running in here. I wish that Domestic Product would take the 6 furlong route, kind of a lesson I learned with Elite Power, right? Thinking these closing horses want more ground isn't always the case. It sounds like Chad's still considering it, even though he has this listed as a second preference. But I would like to see Domestic Product as that kind of late runner. Any LP horses jumping out at you?
I mean, there's really not. It's a strange race. Usually there's one or two, like even Gunpilot just doesn't, he doesn't finish like a Breeders' Cup sprint champion. So he's, you know, I think he's going to take money and sort of be up against it. I think Nakatomi, same thing. Like he's very iffy. You know, I agree about Domestic Product. I think if he goes here, he's the most likely winner because he is a legitimate, you know, grade one finisher. I loved Prince of Monaco. I'm not exactly sure what happened with that horse and why he didn't enter. Domestic Product, I think, is very interesting in the mile and the sprint. But there's no great finishers in this field. If Domestic Product doesn't go, it's very tricky because you can't really get a good line on the Japanese in their finishing ability. I mean, you can watch replays and say, okay, he's finishing, but a lot of times that's sort of an optical illusion. So it's very tricky.
Sean, for 6 weeks last year, you historically slapped me and everyone who would listen in the face about how much you liked White of Ario. Outside of the sprint, is there a horse that you want to slap me about before I let you go?
Honestly, no. I don't have, you know, as of right now, I don't have really strong feelings about anybody. I guess the strongest opinion I have at the moment is East Avenue. I think East Avenue is sort of a slam dunk in the juvenile. I don't know if I want to risk my entire BCBC on a 2-year-old on Friday though. So, this looks like a really wide open year to me. Even the Euros coming over, I glanced at them last night and I couldn't find one that I was just like, you know, oh God, he or she has to win. It's going to be tougher this year.
Shawnee Roy, I love you. I miss you.
Love you too, man. See ya.
PTF back with a world-class broadcaster who I'm very excited to hear his views about this year's Breeders' Cup Mile. He's going to be there. He is there in person working for FanDuel TV, giving a view on the international runners and so much more. My buddy, Richie Prasad. Richie, how are things?
Oh, Pete, it's great to hear you. Great to see you. It's all good. Enjoying my first couple of days at Del Mar. I am fascinated by all the chat about City of Troy, seeing the Aidan O'Brien horses, Charlie Appleby. But genuinely, and I say this with real feeling, I think the mile might be the race of the meeting for me. Those horses at the top of the market, the two fillies, Ramatuel and Porta Fortuna, and Notable Speech. You know, they all ran in the guineas back in the springtime, back in the UK, in 1,000 or 2,000 guineas. And here we are in October, heading to November. And they're still at the forefront of their respective divisions.
The Breeders' Cup is that much more special when you get the horses that run in those spring classics coming back in the fall. And boy, do we ever have that here in the classic with Fierceness and with Forever Young reprising that rivalry. And we've got a version of it here in the Mile as well. Am I correct that it's a little bit of a surprise based on what we thought about the middle of this year to have such a deep European contingent with these three legit Group One runners coming over here? Were you surprised at just how strong this Mile came up?
Well, it's funny you say that, because the two races at Newmarket back in the season, the 1,000 guineas and the 2,000 guineas, it's really interesting how people's take on those two races changed through the year. Originally, a lot of people thought that the 2,000 guineas might have been one of the best renewals we've ever seen, because they went hard, because of the quality of horses that we'd seen. We hadn't heard that much about Notable Speech going into the race. He was the winner. Rosalian, who finished second in that race, he was being pointed at the Breeders' Cup Mile as well. But unfortunately, he's picked up an injury and he's out. But probably one of the best milers around the world, I think. Such a shame he hasn't been able to finish his season. And then further in behind, you had, like, you know, obviously City of Troy was disappointing on that day, but he's bounced back. And the 1,000 guineas wasn't seen in quite the same light as the 2,000 guineas in the immediate aftermath of the race. The 1,000 guineas, some people almost took as a bit of a freak result. El Malka won. But the horses in behind, there was good hope that they could be better in time. One or two had excuses on the day. But ultimately, both races have really held up very strong throughout the whole year. You know, multiple Group One winners out of both races have emerged. And as you say, it's great to see that form from back in the spring, April, May, being maintained through the season. One or two dips along the way for one or two horses, but ultimately, it's proven to be a great guide for the rest of the year.
One of those dips has happened a couple of times. I was going to ask you about for Notable Speech. Some American viewers were actually surprised to see him in, especially some of the early guesses at what odds were going to be the favorite that he was, given those notable blips on the radar. And I had to explain, but you see, when you got the guineas and you've got, you know, the premier summer mile, like, that's going to go a long way to determining markets. This is a new test for him. Tight left-handed bends. How do you think he's going to handle it? Are you concerned at all about those non-going days we've seen from Notable Speech?
It's got to be a little bit of a concern. You have to be fair to the horse and to what he's done, that he's obviously put together a really good profile. Don't forget, we hadn't even seen him till the start of the year. And then, of course, he won his couple of races on the all-weather pretty quickly. Clocked some remarkable times. I think in his second race at Kempton on the all-weather, the last two furlongs of his second race, he clocked 21.79. Finishing split for the last two furlongs. So, you know, he always had a lot of ability and lots of raw speed, but he took that to a whole new level in winning the guineas. And it looked as if he was going to take all before him, but he'd had quite a few runs in a short space of time. So the run at Ascot where he blew out is forgivable, on the sense that he may have just had a little bit too much of a tough time in the early part of the season. Then he was given a break and he came back nicely and he won the Sussex Stakes in really good style against, I think, horses that, at the time, it looked a good race. You know, Factor Cheval was in there. Factor Cheval's run really well on Champions Day again behind Sharon. And I'm prepared to forgive what happened in France last time out. Going into the race, the ground was a huge concern. Soft ground wasn't definitely going to suit him. Connections had actually said that before the race. Chayahu made that clear. And then the way the race was run, that's a put a line through that. Tribalist got away. Sharon couldn't even get him back. And then eventually, you know, I think it's a race that anyone involved with Notable Speech, just forget that, doesn't count. What does count, though, is how he settled into his environment here at Del Mar. Charlie Appleby has been at pains to say the real learning point about going to Paris was travelling him for the first time, and he felt that he learnt a lot from that. And the early signs, having spoken to Charlie Appleby this very morning at Del Mar, are that he has settled in beautifully so far, and he's very happy with him. So positives. The tight turns, I'm less worried about that because he's such a good, strong traveller through his races. And I'm imagining, I have a look through the race, I think there's enough pace in there to suggest that they'll go well enough. He's drawn his six to have a lovely toe through the race. There are a lot of positives for his chances.
Yeah, that's some great information that I hadn't heard yet. And, you know, Appleby, what does he know about winning Breeders' Cup races? He's only 10 for 20 and won this the last 3 years. So I think we could probably have a little bit of in Appleby we trust when it comes to the preparations for Notable Speech. If he wasn't going to excel, probably wouldn't be here. Right? I mean, you can, nobody's forcing him to run Notable Speech here.
No, absolutely. And the other point about it is that Notable Speech is probably, when you consider some of the other horses that Appleby's brought over, you mentioned those last three winners, Space Blues, Modern Games, and Master of the Seas. Modern Games was a pretty good horse, probably the best of the three overall, a French 2000 Guineas winner, but it wasn't quite a Notable Speech. I think Notable Speech is a different level up. And this, I'd say, would be the best horse in terms of his high profile that Appleby's brought to this particular race. This is, you know, it's a classic winner, 2,000 guineas winner. Yep. You know, in the past, you thinking about, okay, Space Blue sort of built himself up through as an older horse. Similar story with Master of the Seas. Modern Games was just tough, and of course, he'd had the experience of the Breeders' Cup the year before, when of course he went in.
Didn't
go out, and my bet didn't stand. Annoyingly, with the bookmaker that I. Backed him, Matt. So, but he'd had that experience, and so it was an automatic decision to come here. Whereas this horse, I think it's a little bit more weight carried. The fact that he's here suggests that he's done everything right in Charlie Appleby's head in terms of ticking the boxes for what he considers to be a proper Breeders' Cup horse. And again, talking to him this morning, quite often he mentioned in terms of like the 2-year-olds, you know, the Alcudras and the Moritz Cities, he's talking about physical appearance. And how their physical conformation is suited to the Breeders' Cup racing. And with that in mind, you're talking about Notable Speech, and you're confident that his trainer knows that he'll go okay on the track.
Let's talk about the fillies in a compare and contrast mode. Looking at the form book would seem maybe a superficial reading that Ramatuel has something to find with Porta Fortuna. I'm contending that I feel like Ramatuel might actually, nothing against Porta Fortuna, but just the way, as handy as she looks, might be one who's even better suited towards USA racing than Porta Fortuna. How do you separate? Do you buy that argument, and how do you separate the two?
I see that argument. I see that argument, particularly as she seems to be a speedier filly. She's very good as a 2-year-old, very fast horse, Ramatuel, and she probably was the best filly in the 1,000 guineas at Newmarket. Her rider obviously kicked for home, thinking he had the race. I think we all thought she was going to go and win a furlong and a half out, but she just tied up coming up that hill. It's that little part. If this was the strongest, or this was a stiff mile, and this was a mile race where they had to race to the upper end of their stamina limit over a mile, I'd be quite concerned about her seeing out the trip, because she's got quite a lot of speed. She won well last time. I know it was soft ground, but you have a look at the time in comparison to the, say, for example, the guineas at Newmarket. You're talking about a race that runs at about 140. The race in France that she won is 120 and change. So I think she's just a quicker filly. And the contours of Del Mar's mile, I think, are more in her favour than any other mile you could possibly think of in the world. So that's a huge positive for her. Against that, with Porta Fortuna, you just have one of the most reliable racehorses, not just fillies, reliable racehorses on the planet. You know, she's never been out of the first three. Her last, you know, all her runs this season and the last couple of back end of last season, all grade ones. And she's in there. She's battling away. She nearly won the guineas at Newmarket, and her subsequent runs at Ascot and in Ireland and Newmarket have been terrific. How could you not be appreciative of her ability? I find it very hard to split the two. But if they do go a good gallop, which I think they will, considering who the horses are in the field, I just have a feeling that Ramatuel in the last 50 yards might just run out of gas. I know it sounds ridiculous. People might say, you're talking garbage, but I just don't have the confidence in her strength over a strongly run proper mile race as I would a Notable Speech or a Porta Fortuna, maybe even a Diego Velasquez. Just that last 50 to 100 yards, I'll be worrying that she might empty out.
Mike, I get it for sure. My counter argument would only be, this is the opposite of a testing mile with the two turns and the tight two turns and just the configuration of Del Mar. But we'll see. It's going to be fascinating to see how it plays out. Let's talk about some of the other runners we have let's talk about the home team before we get to any of the more internationals. From the right draw, I might have tried to tell you a story about Carl Spackler in this race. I hate the far outside for him. I think he's going to have to go forward, be tested all the way. And then we have Johannes, who's one of the best Southern California turf horses we've seen in quite some time. Do you see anything in the past performances that make you think either of them or any of the other Americans might be up to this kind of a task?
Well, it's how they're going to be ridden. I mean, I think Karl Spackler has the bit. So the race he won last time, where obviously Mountain Bear ended up finishing third, Kikuli got into all sorts of trouble, stumbled. I have a little question mark about how smooth his run was in comparison to some of the others. So I see why he's obviously a credible contender, but as you mentioned as well, Jordan 12, that's awkward. Johannes was the one of the domestic team that I was interested in, primarily because he's put together such a lovely profile. And you also don't know just where the depths of his ability are. And I feel that he was the one that perhaps just offered a little bit more scope against the Europeans. You know, what is he, 4 from 4 this season? So I thought he was out of the two, given obviously he's in 9 in comparison to 12. And I just felt that Karl Spackler was probably flattered a little bit when he won last time because of the shenanigans that happened with him. So I thought Johannes would have been the one if I had to look for an alternative to the European runners.
Japan have such a strong group at this year's Breeders' Cup. I've actually heard some wise guy attention for Geoglyph in this race. I was thinking it looked like it was going to be too sharp for him. Do you think he's a serious contender?
Exactly that. I mean, I remember being in Dubai when he ran in the World Cup over 10 furlongs on dirt. You go through all this form. The best of it is really over a mile and a quarter. And he's even stretched out to a mile and a half, as I'm sure you're all aware. And just don't think that at a mile, he's also, I'm just thinking of the speed of this race. And you've talked about the fact that this is a quicker mile. And if Ramatuelle is going to get the mile, a strongly run mile anywhere, it's going to be here because it's a quicker mile. So given this, all those factors, I think Geoglyph is going to struggle with the very fastest horses in the race. I mentioned being able to do 2 furlongs in 21.79 seconds for, you know, notable speech. Is there anything in Geoglyph's record that says he's capable of doing something like that?
Yeah, I don't really think so. I'm going to have a word from the sponsor of this video, Rishi. We're going to come back for your verdict on the race and maybe one other thought that you have on it. But I do want to thank our friends at Twin Spires for sponsoring this video. They are back in the tournaments game in a big way. You can play the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge at twinspires.com. You can also start feeding and qualifying for Horse Race Betting Competition's latest major, the return of the guaranteed $250,000 Kentucky Derby Betting Challenge. Go to twinspires.com and navigate over to their tournaments menu for all the information. Rishi, let's talk about your idea of the winner of this race.
I am going to go with a very tried and trusted formula for this race. Godolphin Blue, Charlie Appleby, William Buick, By the Sire Dubawi, tick, 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 tick for notable speech. Add into the fact that I don't think it matters to him how the race is run in terms of strength of pace, because I think he's the fastest, he's got the fastest turn of foot of anything in the race. If they go hard, as they did in the Guineas, back in Newmarket, he's got a telling turn of foot in those circumstances. If they sprint, he's got the ability to quicken up and go past them because he's a very quick horse. I think all in all, he's the solid selection, but I'll throw one horse that I think should not be ruled out. And if I was playing the exactors, this is the horse that I would put in, and that is Diego Velasquez. Okay, his form doesn't quite match up to the fillies, doesn't quite match up to Notable Speech. But in his career, he's had 8 starts. Out of those 8 starts, he's run left-handed over a mile 3 times. All 3 times at Leopardstown, admittedly. A stiffer mile, yes. But on all 3 occasions, he emerged successful, including last time out, where he put up one of his best performances of his career. And in that race was Maljune. Maljune was behind Notable Speech in the Sussex Stakes. So it doesn't put him that far away from a Notable Speech. So guess what? He's going left-handed over a mile on fast ground for the 4th time in his career. I give him a shot at being the one that Notable Speech has to gun down in the home straight.
Great stuff. Aidan O'Brien, no stranger to winning this race at a price either. Rishi, great stuff as always. Have fun out there. Eat a fish taco for me.
I will eat as many as you'd like, Pete. Honestly, I cannot wait.
Sarah, we got it. If we don't get this done quick, you're going to have to do the blood horse thing by yourself.
I mean, at least I know that there's a valid excuse and that it's kind of my fault if you don't show up for the Blood Horse Stakes preview for tomorrow, but good to be chatting with you about some Breeders' Cup races.
It's definitely Safari's fault. So we got the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, and it's without Cody's wish for the first time in a couple of years, and it's kind of back to feeling like it normally does. A wide open situation with a couple of horses you wish were running in the Classic and a couple of horses you wish we're running in the sprint.
Right. It's sort of that in-between race where if you feel as though you're not quite ready to take on that mile and a quarter and some of the top horses in the classic, and if you're not quite ready to do that cutback and compete with some of the three-year-old males in the sprint where the older horses haven't really been rising to the occasion as much this year so far, it's that middle ground race for some horses that it's wide open and a lot of them do choose to be in there. And it seems like a lot of speed is signed on to this race, but there are a couple horses that do have first preference in the classic, and I'm hoping that they all end up going there so my top pick can get in off the also eligible list.
Well, before we get to your top pick, we got to start probably with this notion that at some point in the last 365 days, I am certain that Muth and National Treasure have both been the kind of favorites for this race. You know, National Treasure ran so well last year, being second, beating a nose to Cody's Wish, and then Muth kind of being that fast three-year-old for Baffert, felt like if he didn't stretch out to the mile and a quarter that this race had its name written, his name written all over it. But both these horses are coming in off of pretty poor performances.
They are, and that's disappointing coming into this race because you would think that this is on their home court where they are going out to California to meet them instead of them traveling back to the East Coast. And they both wowed us with some really solid performances over the past year, but they haven't been in the best form as of late. And so I'm looking to probably play against both of them, especially if they do end up taking some money.
Well, the other horse, obviously, we should talk about before we get to your exciting, also eligible pick that we hope draws in for you. That's called TV. That's what I've learned. Series, because it's a tease. Like, you just,
we're supposed to know about that, I guess. Yeah.
Just stay and watch it. Yep. Domestic Product, who I've said it, I've hinted it. I really wish he was running in the sprint. I think with all that pace in the sprint, I think that he reminds me a little bit of like kind of like that elite power effect where actually going shorter and enhances his late kick. But it sounds like it's almost definite he's going to run in this race. And I think that he's a deserved horse considering his progression as a three-year-old. Do you trust him in this race at a short price?
I mean, I think that you have to make the argument that he is one of the horses coming into this race in the best current form. And whether or not that's good enough in comparison to what we've seen at times from some of the other horses in that race, that's debatable. But if you think that you have some questions to answer about some of these other horses that might be around a similar price range, and he's at least taking those steps forward at the right time, he's suddenly very interesting, and there should be plenty of pace for him in here.
All right, so I'm guessing Cagliostro?
Tio Saint Denis, if he ends up getting in. That race that he ran at Churchill, finishing second at a huge price to First Mission, was wildly impressive, and he showed that he can be forward and take a beating on the front end and still keep trucking along. And I know that First Mission has not been in the same form for the rest of this year. And even though he's had one race since then, Tio Saint Denis, not as impressive in that race, but Japan is coming in with a major contingent to this year's Breeders' Cup. And he's already shown that he can handle running in the U.S. and put away some other speed.
So we did record this after the pre-entries, before the entries, the post-position draw. What's your path? Have you worked out your path for this horse to get in? Who do you need to go where, and is it possible, or do you need something unfortunate to happen? We don't ever wish for that, for someone to not.
No, of course not.
Defection wise,
if we think about from the most positive angle possible, if everybody that has first preference in the classic gets in, we're looking pretty good.
There you go. All right. Well, that's exciting. Now I'm excited to see where fierceness draws. And if Tio Saint Denis draws in.
All right, good. And I'm excited for you to hopefully make the train.
I'm going. I'm leaving. Bye, Sarah.
And if you're wondering, in the end, JK did make it to the show on time. That's going to do it for this monster pod that lives up to its name, clocking in at nearly an hour 45 on the 9 Breeders' Cup races for Saturday. Thanks so much to all the guests who helped us out this year. Thanks to Twin Spires for sponsoring. Thanks to our own In The Money Plus for sponsoring as well. Hope a lot of people are going to be checking that out. InTheMoneyPodcast.com/plus for much more. Hey, for this show, we're going to thank our founding partners, 10 Strike Racing, always love to root for the purple and black around here, and our charity partner, Therapeutic Horses of Saratoga. Support them and the work they do in themoneypodcast.com/horses, especially if you're having to score out on some of this free info on Breeders' Cup races. Why not make a generous donation over there, as so many listeners and viewers have. Speaking of viewers, get involved in the conversation. Head over to our YouTube channel, drop a comment with who you like in these races. And while you're there, go ahead and subscribe. Click that notification bell. We are so close to the 10,000 subs, and I'm very excited for that milestone, but not as much as my daughter, Perrin, who's completely geeked about it. Anyway, going to be fun. Godspeed at the Breeders' Cup. Lots more content coming down your way. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Check out InTheMoneyPodcast.com. You won't miss any of it. Follow me on Twitter, at LoomsBoldly. I'll be promoting a lot of it there. I'm Peter Thomas for Natal. May you win all your Breeders' Cup photos. Just me and you.